Just a few days ago, I was here and we were discussing the Nusach HaTfilah of the davening of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I'd like to start with another comment in connection with the Nusach HaTfilah. In the davening, we use an expression when we describe how we have a special relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he mentioned Shimcha HaGodol VaHaKadosh Aleinu Karosa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has used his name and placed it on us. In other words, that we are called the Am Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his name and he placed it on us. We are called Am Hashem. In another place in the davening we say Ushmeinu Karosa Bishmecha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken our name and incorporated it within his name. He is called Elokei Yisrael. So the commentaries explain that what this is all about is that the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael is described in Tanakh as one of a marriage, and when a couple get married, it's supposed to be a p'china, like it says in Parshas Bereishis, v'hoyu lebosarecha, they're supposed to blend in together and unite together. So it's not proper. Many of the women today maintain their maiden names, the husband maintains his name, the wife maintains her maiden name, and each one has their own career and they have their own interests. So that's not right. The halacha says that either the husband is supposed to take on the wife's family name or the wife is supposed to take on the husband's family name, whichever is better. Let's say in Eretz Yisrael the name Cook. Rabbi Cook's name sold better than other people's. So when Rabbi Cook had a son-in-law, so he took on the name Cook instead of took on his wife's name. Instead of the wife taking on his name, he took on the wife's name. The Marsha took on his wife's name also because his mother-in-law supported his yeshiva. So in some countries, the husband takes on the wife's name. In some countries, the wife takes on the husband's name. But if each one maintains their maiden name, each one maintains their own identity, they're not interested in blending it together. That's not a marriage. So we say, regarding HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'shimcha both, v'shimcha HaGodol v'HaKadosh Aleinu Karosa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken his name and incorporated it within our name. We are called Am Hashem. V'shmeinu Karosa b'shmecho, he has taken our name and incorporated it within his name. He has called Elokei Yisrael. He wants to blend together with the Jewish people, that it should be v'hoyu lebosarecha, so to speak. That it should be kodesh b'richo, v'Yisrael should be chad. This is the basis of the principle of Baal ki ishtoi and isha ki bailo. The Chumash has a din that only kohanim are permitted to eat truma. If the kohen has children, the sons and the daughters are also permitted to eat truma. The minute the daughter marries a non-kohen, so the Chumash says she's no longer permitted to eat truma, because ishto kibaylo, just like the husband is not a kohen, so as long as the daughter is married to a non-kohen, we treat her as if she's not a kohenis. And the reverse is also true. If you have a kohen who's married to a girl who's not a kohenis, so as long as she's married to the kohen, esh is kohen, ochel is betruma. So the Sefer HaChinuch explains the reason why these two dinim are so, is because ishta kegufa, because we treat them in a certain sense, as if ohayu lebasarechon, they're supposed to blend in together. There is the famous Shitas HaRaivid, the Raivid's opinion. Those who study in yeshivas know there's a famous Gemara about Palgina Dibura, one of the famous sugis in the Gemara. So the Raivid has an unusual interpretation in that Gemara, and the basis of his pshat is that if I have a brother, if I have a father, if I have a child, if I have a cousin, so that Kroivim Apostle Eidus. The discussion of Palgin and Dibur is in the context of relatives are not allowed to serve as a witness for or against their relatives. So if I am related to somebody, that's a Karev, and that's one Madrege. What about a person testifying about himself, for or against himself? That's a different din. That's more than din. Gemara has an expression, Adam Karev Eitz Alatzmo, but the Ravid says, no, that's a different din. That's Baldovar. So then the Ravid interprets the Gemara in Sanhedrin as having a question, what about a husband and a wife? What's that considered? So the Gemara says, a husband and a wife is not like a relative. It's not like a brother. It's not like a cousin. It's not like a parent. No, that's like a Baldovar, because Ishtei Keguf and Baal Ki Ishtoi, it's considered a halacha of Baldovar. And the Gemara has the principle of Ishtei Keguf and Baal Ki Ishtoi, that in a certain sense they blend in together, v'hoyu lebosar echad. So Gemara has this with respect to Krovim being psunu leidus. Let's say you have two sisters who are married to two husbands. So even though the husbands are not related to each other, they're not blood relatives, you still say Baal Ki Ishtoi, Ishtei Kegufoi. So the brothers-in-law, who are only brothers-in-law, they're brothers by marriage, So they have the psul of a brother. Like brothers are posulated, so the brothers-in-law posul also, because we say Baal Ki Ishtoi, in Ishtoi Ki Gufoi. This idea of the Ravid, that we say Baal Ki Ishtoi, we consider the husband and the wife as if the Baal Dover, more than considering them as if they would just be Stam Kroivim, this is of course based on the Pasuk in Bereishis, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created all of the animals, so the Torah says he created a Zohar Nekevat, he created many Zohar and many Nekevas, and each one found their mates later on. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, so he only created Adam, he didn't create Chava. And then he created Chava from Adam, and Adam realizes this is Basim Ipsori Ve'etzim Me'atzomai, he calls his wife Isha because she came from Ish. She came from Ish. So the Ravid explains in his introduction to the Sefer Balei HaNefesh that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted this to serve as the dugma, to serve as the example for all the future generations. There's supposed to be an institution of marriage for all human beings, not only for the Jewish people. Adam Rishon was not Jewish. And the marriage should be, the nature of the marriage should be such that v'ha'ila basar echad, that the wife should be considered as if she's mamish ishta gegufa, to come from the husband's body. Like originally, Chava was created from Adam Arishan's body. So too throughout all the future generations, even though the wife doesn't come from the husband's body, but they should try to blend it together to be considered v'ha'ila basar echad. In recent years, we know from the world of medicine that there's a concern of organ rejection when they make organ transplants. So they take an organ from one person's body and they introduce it into someone else's body. So the body has a natural tendency to reject foreign matter, to reject foreign organs. And the doctors know they have to do something in order to prevent this act of rejection. So that's what, in recent years, we understand better what the Ravid is talking about on his comment on the Pasuk in Bereishis. That with respect to man, we want to have an institution of marriage. How can you have an institution of marriage? The body normally rejects foreign matter. So why? How is it possible for a man and his wife to live together in peace and harmony? The body would normally have the tendency of rejecting this foreign matter. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created people in such a way that kimeish lukoch hazos, that it's like Chava came from Adam, so it's the same body. It's not a foreign matter. So too, throughout all the future generations, the wife and the husband will have the ability to blend in together. The Mishnah, famous Mishnah, tells us in Pirkei Avos, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Basara Mamoris Nivra Ha'olam. He made 10 declarations, Yihyor and Yihirakia, and so on and so forth. And the Gemara says, it says 9 times, Vayomer Elokim, and these are 9 of the Asara Mamoris. A Maimer means a declaration, and the 10th Maimer is Bereishis. The Gemara says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu declared Bereishis Bar Elokim, Bereishis is also a Maimer. So the commentaries on Pirkei Avos, on that Mishnah, discuss which exactly are the 9 times that it says Vayomer Elokim. How do you, when you look through Bereishis, it doesn't say exactly 9 times. So there are different ways to cheshbon the 9 times Vayomer Elokim. So some of the Mefarshim explain in the Machzor Vitri, that's from the Balei HaTosfos, Talmidim of Rashi, so some of them explain that there are 2 different Briyas that are described in Parshas Bereishis. One of the Asara Mamaris is Vayomer Elokim Nasa Adam B'Tzalmenu, creating man. And as a separate Briya is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says Es Eloheizu Kenegdo, that marriage as an institution is a separate Briya. It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created human beings and Memela, people can live together in peace and harmony. No, it's not so. Every human being is egotistical and they're very much out for themselves. Everybody is always interested in his own needs. And this is a special Briya that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, that there's a possibility of having Shalom Bayis, that a man and a woman can blend in together. V'hoyu l'basar echad. There are 2 mitzvahs that we are familiar with, that the Torah speaks of. One is the mitzvah of Kovar Abriyas, and the other one is the mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael. The mitzvah of Kovar Abriyas appears in Parshas Kedoshim, in Parshas Emor, where the Torah says, Kohanim are not permitted to be metami to meisim, unless it's one of the 7 relatives. And then the Chumash says, if the Kohen has one of the parents dies, or one of the children dies, chalila, something like that, or a sister dies, it says, lo yitamo, the Kohen is permitted to be metami to his sister. So the Talmud records that there was a dispute in the days of the Tanoim, and it was earlier as a repeat of a dispute that already existed in the days of the second Beis Hamikdash, how to read that pasuk, lo yitamo. It means it's reshus, it's permitted for the Kohen to be mitame to the seven relatives. Normally he's not allowed to go to a funeral, and if it's one of the close relatives, he's permitted to. Or should we understand more than that? Lo yitamo chovo. The Kohen is obligated to attend a funeral even if he doesn't care to, even if he has reasons why he would like not to attend the funeral. So that's the accepted opinion. The Gemara says that's the view of Rabbi Akiva as opposed to Rabbi Shmuel. The Gemara says Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, they had this dispute after the destruction of the Second Temple already, way years before, during the period of the Second Temple. This was a dispute among the Kohanim, and the accepted opinion then was also like Rabbi Akiva maintained in the later generations. It was an ongoing debate, and that's the accepted psak. Lo yitamo is a chov. So the Talmud understands this mitzvah, lo yitamo, is the mitzvah of kavod abrius, to show kavod to all other human beings. Everyone was created b'tzelem elokim, and everyone deserves to have kavod abrius. A person has to have kavod abrius for himself also, self-dignity, and to show, to act towards all other people with proper derech eretz and dignity. So the Gemara says in many different places, yes, like we would say in America, all men are created equal. Everybody was created but b'tzelem elokim, and some people are more equal than others. So there is more of a din of kavod abrius towards one's parents. It's like a din of kibud avi, eh? And there's a din of kvod hamelach, and there's a din of kvod talmid hachachamim. In general, any talmid hachachamim, there's a din, I have to be mechabed my Rebbe, and there's a din of kvod hanovi, you have to be mechabed hanovi. And then the Gemara and the Rambam have a whole hierarchy. How do you put which one on top of which? How do you figure out, when you have a conflict between Kibud Av and Kibud Eim, Adin of Kvayt HaMelech and Kvayt HaNovi, Kvayt HaMid HaChachamim, Chief Rabbi, also Adin, Nasi, Kvayt HaNasi, so what's the hierarchy over here? It's a long discussion in the Gemara and the Ram. So the Gemara also says in the context of this topic of Kavod Abrius, there is a din that the husband is Mechuyev B'Kvayt Ishtoi and the wife is Mechuyev B'Kvayt Bailo. It is not a contradiction. Each one has an obligation to be Mechabed the other one. Not at all a contradiction. And the Gemara even makes a statement, and this is the din in Shulchan Aruch, Oy v'sishte kegufa mechabda yoyse migufay. The husband has to be mechabed his wife more than he would be interested in being mechabed himself. What does that mean exactly? Mechabda yoyse migufay. So it's in the context in the Gemara, it would appear that what it means is, let's say the husband has enough clothing, he has suits for Shabbos and for weekdays and shoes, he has everything that he needs. And the wife also has everything. And then the husband one day gets a bonus. And they decide they're going to use this bonus to buy something new, some new clothing. So there's a toss-up. Should the husband buy a new suit or should the wife buy a new outfit? So if the wife has 20 closets full of outfits and the husband just barely has anything, so it's the husband's turn to buy something. But let's say everything is even. Everything is equal. The husband has enough to pull through and the wife has enough. So then if you have some extra spending money, and you want to spend it either on the toss-up, either spend it on the husband and the wife. So that's what the Gemara says, bottom line. Mechabda yose megufa. Kovid means to spend money. Kovid to mechabed the wife. Some husbands have the attitude, mechabed, yeah, he puts on her fur coat. He takes off her fur coat. He holds the chair for her when she sits down, or he opens the door for her. He lets her go first. But to spend a penny, no. The fur coat, that's what her father gave her. Whatever she has, the father gave. I'm not going to spend any money. So that's what the Gemara said. That's a very bad attitude. The Gemara says that it's a skula for ashiris. Usually it's a skula for anirs if you spend your money. But the Gemara says sometimes spending money is a skula for ashiris. So the Gemara says if you give money to tzedakah, the Gemara says in Baba Basra, in the sugya of tzedakah, if you give money for tzedakah within reason, not that a person gives away his last penny, if a person gives money to tzedakah according to what the halacha has to say, that is a skula for ashiris. And the Gemara says also, if a husband spends money out of his wife within reason, not that he's going to take on an extra job to work from 12 o'clock at night to 3 o'clock in the morning in addition to the other five jobs that he has all day and all night, within reason. So if a husband spends money properly on his wife, that's a zgula for ashiris. These are the yoytzim in aklal, that spending money is a zgula for ashiris as opposed to a zgula for aniris. This is the statement the Gemara has. Rava told the students in Perek HaZohav, usually in yeshivas they do learn Perek HaZohav, the end of Ksuba is where the Gemara tells how a husband is supposed to treat his wife and how the wife is obligated to treat the husband. Usually in yeshivas they never get that far. But Perek HaZohav, that they do study in yeshivas. And the Gemara tells in Perek HaZohav that Robert told the students, Okiru Nishaihu, you should be mechabed your wife, spend money on your wives, kehechad b'tisasru, that will serve as a zgula for ashiris. And that's a common refrain that appears in the Sifrei HaChassidus. They all quote that Gemara, that the Chassidus Rebbe used to tell over the Gemara, that the Gemara recommends this. One has to be mechaber his wife. So Kvoit HaBaal and Kvoit HaYisha, the husband has an obligation to be mechaber the wife, the wife has an obligation to be mechaber the husband, and they're not contradictory. This is a detailed prat within the general category of the mitzvah of Kavod HaBriyos. We have to show Kavod to all human beings. We have to show more Kavod to Acheinu B'nai Yisrael, because we are all Banim Lamakam, we're all part of the same family. All of mankind is B'Tzelem Elokim. And B'nai Yisrael have a mile over the Umos Olam that we are Banim Lamakam, so there's more of a Chiv Kavod HaBriyos towards B'nai Yisrael, and more of a Chiv Kavod HaBriyos towards family, and a Chiv Kavod to Talmid HaChachamim, and to parents, and so on and so forth, to the Melech, to the Nasi, to the Rosh HaSanhedrin. So one of the details within this parsha of Kavod HaBriyos is the husband and the wife have to show Kavod for each other. And then the Gemara has another prat within the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael. There is a pasuk, there is a mitzvah, v'ahavta l'racha kamoicha. You have to show love to all Jewish people. Yeah, but the Gemara says it's obvious I have to love my wife much more than I love my next door neighbor's wife. There's a prat within the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael that the person has to love his wife more than he loves other people. A lot of people don't have that attitude. They're married and it's a business relationship that the husband gives over the checks to the wife and she raises the children, but he really has a crush on somebody else. Or a lot of women have such an attitude. They really don't respect their husbands. They don't have love towards the husband. They don't have respect towards the husband. But they have this business relationship, so it's going, so they let it go like that. So that's not the way it's supposed to be. And the Gemara says one should check out in advance to make sure that when he or she marries, they should marry a person whom they will be able to respect and whom they will be able to shower their love on, a person whom they will love. That's what the Gemara says. Also, lo adam shikadosh suisha ad shirena tchila. It's prohibited for a man to marry a girl unless he sees her first and he knows that that he thinks he can respect her and he thinks that he can love her. In the days of the Talmud, maybe it was sufficient, but Achi Irena Tchila, maybe it was enough just to look at the girl a little bit. Today, we assume that that's not enough, just to look at the girl. Years ago, many of you may remember, they interviewed Rav Moshe Bick for the Yiddish newspaper, so he said, Rav Moshe Bick was doing so many gittin, there were so many people getting divorced. And from the Bnei HaYeshivas, they were getting divorced. There's so many more divorces now than in earlier years. So Rav Moshe Bick said, he thinks that it's a big mistake that the people are getting engaged so early. He said he thinks they have to go out a minimum of 8 dates. Less than 8 dates, he doesn't know if the marriage will be meaningful. Well, that's the shiur today for Achi Irena Tchila. They have to get to know each other at least to the extent of 8 days, so they should be able to respect each other and love each other. So at that time, the Satma Rebbe was still alive, the previous Satma Rebbe, so he was always very sharp with his quips. So they quote in the Yiddish newspaper the next week that the Satmar Rebbe gezukt, he gave a krecht and he said, "Katzti bechayim epnei benois ches." It's disgusting. The eight dates, benois ches, ches is 8. He says to go 8 dates. That's terrible. Maybe by Satmar it works without 8 dates, but I hope it works. But by us, the Talmud says that it's necessary to get to know each other in advance to make sure that one will be able to fulfill this mitzvah. Towards each other, the husband and the wife should really love each other, and they should be able to show respect for each other. The Rambam understands from the Gemara that the respect that the husband, the kavod that the husband has to give towards the wife, is not exactly the same as the kavod that the wife has to give towards the husband. The Rambam understands that the kavod that the wife has to give towards the husband is that she should look up to him as if he's a tsar, as if he's some very important dignitary. So we understand, and the kavod that the husband gives to the wife means that he should spend money on his wife. He should be respectful of her, but he should spend money on his wife. So that's why we understand, the Rambam got this from the statement in the Gemara. The Gemara gives a recommendation that when a man is looking for a shidduch, they can recommend the chos dargo and etzivit, so he should marry a girl who is in a slightly lower level of society than himself. If he's going to marry the chief rabbi of the world, he's going to marry chief rabbi's daughter, so the girl's not going to have any respect for him. Her father was the chief rabbi of the world. The last gadol in the world was her father. He's not going to have respect for her husband. Her husband may be much greater than her father, but she's not going to respect her husband. She looks up too much to her father. So the Gemara always gives the recommendation, in order, if you want the wife to look up towards her husband, to have that kind of kavod, the way the Rambam understood this Gemara, she should really look up to him as a chash of a person. So the Gemara says, make sure that when a man marries, he should marry a girl whose yichus is slightly lower than his. Taisus points out that there was always a problem of parnasa in the days of the Balei Taisus, Middle Ages, and people can lose their parnasa, and there were pogroms going on, and there were the crusades going on, and people were being killed, and the fathers were killed, and no one had any money to marry off the yesaimis. So Taisus says that we are in violation of this din in the Gemara. The Gemara says a father should never marry off his daughter if she's too young. You have to wait till the girl matures and she understands whom we're marrying her off to. And she says, "Beploni ani roitza," she's masking, so she'll be able to show love towards him and she'll be able to show kavod towards him. A man is going to marry off his daughter at a very young age, she doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't know bichlal what the whole issue is, so she won't be able to respect him later on. So Taisus writes that, unfortunately, due to the circumstances that Parnassa was so bad, and everybody was besakana, and they lived in the middle of all of the crusades and so on. So Taisus says, Lohairu Ashur, we are in violation of these recommendations of the Gemara. But that's only during the days of the Balei Taisus. There's no mitzvah to maintain this Hairu Ashur of the Balei Taisus to our times. If we live in a time that the people have reasonable parnasa and it's reasonably safe and we don't have any pogroms, so the proper thing is to follow this instruction of the Gemara. The people should be careful before they get married, to make sure that they marry one whom they will be able to show love for and to show kavod for. The idea of the ahava, the love that a husband should have for the wife, what is this love all about? So the Pashta says, we assume, as the Medrash points out, that a person is considered incomplete until they get married. After marriage, people mature more, they flourish more, so each of the spouses helps the other one out to develop themselves. So since each one is helping out the other one, so this is the reason why it's important that they should have a special gedar ahavor towards each other. One has to be careful, though, that it shouldn't be sometimes people just are madly in love with their spouses and they ignore Avas Hashem. This is a problem. Let's say a couple is married, and one of them decides they don't want to follow all the laws of the Torah. There are a lot of laws of Taras HaMishpacha, laws of Tznias, many halachas. So if one of them decides they don't want to be so medactic on everything, so then you're not supposed to have, in such an instance, you're not supposed to display your absolute love and your absolute allegiance toward your spouse. The only one you have absolute allegiance to is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Torah tells us, we recite it 2-3 times a day, you have to reserve all of your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what do you mean you reserve all of your love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So how does anybody love their children? How does anybody love their spouse? So the Chovas HaLevavos talks about this. He says, no. One loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to raise families. And in order to raise a family, you have to get married, you have to have children. So one loves his spouse, so one loves his children as a chelik, as part of the mitzvah of demonstrating love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's not that there's an independent, it's not supposed to be an independent love for one spouse or an independent love for one's children. That's the famous interpretation of the Medrash that Rashi quotes on Chumash, that when Yaakov Avinu hadn't seen his son Yosef for so many years, they were separated and Yosef was in Egypt for over 22 years. So finally, when Yaakov Avinu comes to Yosef, so it says that Yosef is hugging the father, and kissing the father, and Yaakov Avinu is not kissing his son. How come? So Rashi says, Yaakov Avinu is busy saying Kriya Shema. Yosef is busy saying Kriya Shema. Well, it was man Sovzman Kriya Shema. He only had 5 minutes left. Punkt then. He knew he was coming to Yosef, so he should have said Krishma before. Yosef is now. Why are you saying Krishma now? So the commentaries explain on that medrash that Rashi quotes, the famous medrash, it doesn't mean that it was the Sovzman Kriya Shema that he had to say. He already Shangi Davent on his way. He already said Kriya Shema before. It means when he came and he met Yosef, and he was overcome with the love for his son whom he hadn't seen. That was the favorite son, and the favorite son he thought was dead 22 years ago. He thought he was devoured by a wild beast. And now he sees the son, and he was so overwhelmed with feelings of love towards his son. So he felt that this is a begimen, his love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's supposed to love God b'chol levavcho. and the love towards the spouse and the love towards the other members of the family, to the children and all the rest of the members of the family, is supposed to be an aspect of Avas Hashem. And Yaakov Avinu saw that he's being so overwhelmed with love towards the son, this is already an independent love, so he felt it's he is now required to chazak Kriya Shema. It wasn't the regular Kriya Shema for Shacharis, it wasn't the regular Kriya Shema for Ma'ariv. It was a nuchi of Kriya Shema to make sure that his love towards his son should be, like the Chovas Halvavos says, should be as an aspect of his love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, there is no such thing as an absolute allegiance to a spouse or an absolute allegiance to children. I know that my wife is spying. Years ago, there used to be a big debate about this. A person knows that his spouse is spying for the communists, so is he supposed to master over the spouse to the FBI? Well, not during the McCarthy era. You used to have public discussions about this and public debates. What do you mean? Of course he has to give over to the... What do you mean? A person has absolute love towards his spouse to the exclusion of all of Klal Yisrael, to the exclusion of the rest of the country. They'll give over all the secrets to the Soviets and then Russia will attack America. That doesn't make any sense. A person is supposed to love his spouse and love his children as not as an independent love, as an aspect of Avas Hashem. If Avas Hashem says you have to protect your country, so that's more important than protecting the spouse. Al pi pashtus. A way to demonstrate one's love towards a spouse. See, there's a problem. People get used to each other when people are dating, so they're all excited. They never met this person before, and they start giving matonis and this and that. Then after they get married, also the excitement the first couple of weeks. And then after a couple of months go by, they're used to living, so everything becomes a habit. So the excitement of the love towards each other wears off. So how does one reawaken that love? So Benoik Shabbalim, the way to reawaken the love is to surprise the spouse by doing something that would make them happy without them asking me to do. I shouldn't wait till my wife asks me to take down the garbage. Could you please pick up the mail from the mailbox? I know that this would make my wife happier. The wife knows that this would make her husband happy. So they should do things for each other that the other person didn't ask. This is the same way we assume we fulfill the mitzvah of Yahavta es Hashem Elokecha. How do you demonstrate your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu? By keeping the mitzvahs. He commands you to keep the mitzvahs. You better keep those mitzvahs or you burn in Gehenna. How does that show that you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So that's what the commentaries explain. You have to do something to surprise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kiva Yocho. As if I figure out what would make HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy, Kiva Yocho. So I see what direction he wants us to go in the Shmiras HaMitzvah. So I surprise him by volunteering to go even Lifnei Mishuras HaDin, more than he asks me to do. That's the comment that the Mishnah has in Maseches Avodah Zarah, commenting on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Ki Tovim Deidecho Miyoyin. That the boy and the girl demonstrate love for each other, and it's a mashal for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael. So the Rabbanu Shalom says he appreciates, the boy is telling the girl, the Rabbanu Shalom is the boy and Knesset Yisrael is the girl. So the boy tells the girl, Ki tov m'daydecha miyoyin. I appreciate the love that you show me more than I appreciate drinking wine. What's my mashal does? It's like in Yiddish, there's such a niggin. That the girl loves the boy more than Pesach Dika Shmalza, whatever it is. What kind of a mashal is that? HaKadosh Baruch appreciates the love that we show him more than wine. What do you mean more than wine? There's no comparison. You're comparing apples with potatoes over here. What's the comparison? So the Mishnah gives you the interpretation of the Pasuk. Kitovim dedecha miyoy means chavivim direseh from yosem miyena shal Torah. Wine means the real McCoy, the dinim de min haTorah, the mitzvahs. So the Rabbanu Shalom says, I appreciate very much when you keep all the mitzvahs that I commanded you, all the 613 mitzvahs, but when you surprise me and you do above and beyond what I asked you to do because you know that that would make me happy, you instituted dinim derabbanan. I didn't ask you to do these dinim derabbanan. I gave you the mitzvahs min haTorah. So when you surprise me by doing something that you know would kivayocha make me happy, I appreciate that more than I appreciate the fact that you keep the mitzvahs that I commend you. The mitzvah I commend you, you may be doing it because you're afraid you're going to burn in Gehenna. You may be doing it mipachad, miyiras oinish. But when you go above and beyond, lifnei mishuras hadin, so that shows that you really love the mitzvahs that I gave, and you want to go further to do things that will make me happy. So that's the mitzvah of Avas Hashem means that. It means to do things to surprise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to do things that he never commanded us to do. in order to show that we love him. That's how the Gemara says, Lama toikim emirim, and Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara says, why do we blow tkiyas demiyushav and tkiyas demiyun? We blow much more tkiyas than the Rabbanu Shalom commanded us. The Gemara says, min hatar, we're only obligated to blow either two or three times tkiyah, trua, tkiyah. We blow many, many times. We blow mea koilas. We blow 100 koilas. Why so much? So the Gemara says, the reason why we blow so much shofar is kedei la'arbeiv es hakotan, es hasotan, in order to confuse the sotan. How do we succeed in confusing the sotan by blowing extra tkiyas? So Rashi gives posh b'shat in the Gemara. Rashi says, the sotan comes on the Yom HaDin HaRosh Hashanah to complain, has good to tainus. These people, they violated this din, they violated that din, they didn't do this mitzvah, they didn't do that mitzvah, but on Rosh Hashanah, the Yom HaDin, when the Sotan has a whole list of complaints against us, we demonstrate that we appreciate the mitzvah so much, we do above and beyond what we're obligated to do. Rabbi Shalom told us just to blow shofar, tkiyah, trua, tkiyah, two times or three times, and we blow mea koilos, so we demonstrate that we have such a chavivas ha-mitzvah, we cherish the mitzvahs, we love them so much, we do above and beyond the call of duty. So then the Sotan collapses. What's he going to complain against us? We're showing that we love the mitzvahs so much that we do more than the Rabbanu Shalom commands us. So this is the way one is supposed to demonstrate one's love towards a spouse. Each one should surprise the other one once in a while by doing things that they know would make the other party happy, and thereby to express their ahava towards each other. I remember when I was single, I was going out with one particular girl. And whenever she spoke to me, she always called me Reb Tzvi. So I was reminded there's a famous letter from the Chazon Ish, a brief letter that the Chazon Ish wrote some guidelines for yeshiva people, how they should treat their wives, how to be a good husband. So he writes in that famous letter, it's available, everybody quotes that letter, it's just a two-page letter. So he writes in the letter that in Yiddish, usually when you speak to an older person or you speak to some respected individual, so you say, zei, or you say in plural, ear. You don't say du. If you speak to a child, you say du. But if you speak to a, like when you speak to the judge in court, you say, your honor. You don't say, hey, Mr. Rosenberg, you call the judge, Mr. Rosenberg, I got something. You say, your honor, you have to speak in third person. So the Chazon Ish says, but if a couple is married and they're going to speak with such tercherets towards each other, Mr. Schechter, Mrs. Schechter, something like that, that takes away from the closeness, takes away from the love. You should call each other by the first name and have a little more, a little less tercherets. If there's too much tercherets, so then it takes away from the closeness and from the chiba and from the ahava that there's supposed to be. It has to be a little less tercherets in order to have a little more hiskarvus. It is important to realize that a major component part of marriage is that there is a, has to be a physical attraction to each other. The Torah does say that part of marriage is the obligation of the husband towards the wife and the obligation of the wife towards the husband to have marital relations. The Torah has a din, oinoso lo yigra, the husband is not permitted to cheat his wife with respect to ona. But still, the rabbis of the Talmud say that ish v'isha, when a couple gets married, shechina shuri b'neim, they both have the same thing in common. There's an aleph and a shin. This is a passage in the Gemara. This is not a balaturim. It's not a chassidish sefer. The Gemara has this comment, that the word ish and the word isha both have the letters aleph and shin, and the difference is that the word ish has a yud, and the word isha has a hey, and the combination of the yud and the hey represents shem Hashem ko. So when the Sholem bites between the two, and then you have Shechina Shuri B'neim. Very interesting. The rabbis are speaking of an institution of marriage. We all know what marriage is all about. It's a very physical relationship. And before a couple gets married, they have to make sure that there's absolutely a physical attraction. If the boy's going to keep on saying Shekhar Achein V'Hevel HaYofi, and he doesn't see his whole lifetime is going to say Shekhar Achein V'Hevel HaYofi, it's not going to be a good marriage. He's only going to, you have to have Ava, one love, one level of love has to be that his wife is helping him develop and mature, and another level of love has to be a physical love also. And with that physical love, with that expression of physical love, the rabbis see that there's a Shechina Shuri B'neim. Just because there's Gashmias doesn't mean that this is pogame, that it takes away from the Ruchnias. If the Gashmias is done in a proper fashion, this can enhance one's ruchnius. The rabbis of the Talmud mentioned that it's important that the husband and the wife have to have their relationship, their gashmi should be in its niyazdika fashion. In its niyazdika, the Talmud tells this famous story. One of the rabbis was doing work in the Maris HaMachpelah. His job was, he had to mark off where the Kohanim are not permitted to go. The Talmud assumes Kohanim are forbidden to go. In the Maris HaMachpelah, at least in the days of the Talmud, it's a question, maybe today, because they built all these buildings on top. Some of the Paskim say that the way the buildings are situated, the Kohanim are permitted to go. That's a new question. Maybe the situation changed. But in the days of the Talmud, it was assumed that Kohanim are not permitted to go to the Maris HaMachpelah because there are dead bodies over there. So the Gemara says the Rebbe Banor, the Amora, whose responsibility it was to mark off all of the graves and to put up signs that Kohanim are not allowed to go here because of the Tumas Hameis, so he went into the Maris HaMachpelah and he saw Avraham Avinu and Sarah. So the Gemara says Avraham Avinu was laying down on Sarah's lap. He had his head on Sarah's lap and she was playing with his hair and they were very lovey-dovey. So when this Rebbe Banor walked in, so they started to whisper to each other, hey, this is not their cheret. This stranger just came in, so we're not supposed to be in such a position. Now, so they sat up in a respectable position, Avraham and Sarah, until the stranger went out, until Rabbi Banor went out. He had to figure out exactly where the tumah is going to go. And then when he went out, so they went back to their cozy position again. So this story is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that it's not derech eretz that a husband should hug his wife and kiss his wife in public and do acts. A husband has to love his wife. He has to hug his wife. He has to kiss his wife, yes, but privately, not in public. You don't do everything in public that you do in private. I remember on one occasion there was a function of the rabbinic alumni of the yeshiva. So one of the younger mesmochim had just gotten married a few months earlier. So he was standing in the halls and kissing his wife. So all the people walked by. What a meshugan. He said, turned around. He said, what's wrong? We're married. There's nothing wrong. So I remember one of the rabbis said, he said to the young man who just got married, this marriage is going to end up in a divorce. In 2 years, they got divorced. Of course, it's ridiculous. It's niyus. Niyus means to lead a private life. The Rabbanu Shalom wants, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very private. He's so private, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kel mistata, HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does such a good job of hiding, there are many people who don't even believe that he's there. There are many people who don't even realize that there is a Rabbanu Shalom. So the Rabbanu Shalom tells us, V'halachta bidrochav, he created us all b'tzelem elikim, and he wants us to preserve that tzelem elikim. Part of the tzelem elikim is that he's a kel mistata, we should lead private lives also. But sometimes you have no brere, you need someone to speak in shul, you have to have a chazan to dam franom, you have to have a rabbi, you have to have a president of a shul, you have to have a mayor of the city, you have to have a people in the government, so you have no choice. But still, in all other things, when there's no hechrech to go public, so the recommendation always is to lead a very private life. And in these kind of things, we call these in yonit sneers, these for sure. A person should only do bitzina to maintain his privacy, as opposed to doing these things before hesia. The Mishnah tells us in Ksubis that sneus, maintaining privacy in these personal matters of marriage, is crucial to the marriage. The Mishnah tells us that whenever a man divorces his wife, he's obligated to pay ksuba unless we can demonstrate that the wife was at fault for ruining the marriage. So the Mishnah says, what would be an example? Let's say the wife decides she doesn't want to be religious anymore. She doesn't want to be Shemesh Shabbos anymore. That's not grounds for divorce. If the husband decides he wants to be married to a religious girl and she doesn't want to be Shemesh Shabbos anymore, he can divorce her, but he has to give her a ksuba. So the Mishnah describes what cases that we consider that the wife is responsible for ruining the marriage. So the Mishnah has one example. She speaks in public about her marital relations with other people as she walks around dressed improperly in public. So the Mishnah understands, the Tanaim understood that tznius with respect to personal matters of the marriage is considered crucial to maintaining the marriage. And if the wife is in violation of the principle of privacy with respect to the personal aspects of the marriage, this is considered ruination of the marriage, and it's considered as if the wife is responsible for ruining the marriage and the husband can divorce her without paying any ksuba. In order for the wife to maintain her husband's love, husband has to love his wife more than he loves other women, and the wife has to love her husband more than she loves other men. So in order to maintain the husband's love for his wife, it's necessary for the wife to dress properly, to dress up nicely. A lot of the women have the attitude, once they get engaged and once they get married, they already succeeded in landing their man. So now they can live like slobs. They don't have to dress up nicely. No, when they go to a wedding, they'll get all dressed up. They don't have to dress up nicely. They already have their husband. They don't have to keep a neat house. It's not necessary. The Gemara says that that's terrible. The Gemara says that shlosha dvarim achivim daito shalodim. There are three things that are crucial for a man to have a harchoves hadas, to enjoy life. One is an isha noa, a put-together wife. One is a dira noa, an apartment that's neat, clean, put together. And kelim noim, nice furniture, nice dishes. Everything should be nice in the home. Just the other day, I live right not far from yeshiva. So the other day, my wife had to come to tell me something. She couldn't get me on the phone. Wasn't near any telephone, so she came to the yeshiva. It's an 8-minute walk. And she walked in and she gave me a message about something. So one of the rabbanim saw her. So he said jokingly, "Hey, how come you're all dolled up today?" So she said back, "What do you mean? This is the way I dress when I wash the floors." And it was true. That's the way she always dresses, with a fancy shape, with a fancy dress. And that's the way it should be. If the wife wants the husband to continue loving her, so she has to dress properly, like she dressed when they were going out on dates, before they got engaged. Shouldn't have the attitude that after she landed the fellow, so there's no need to dress up nicely. And the husband has an obligation, taka, to spend time with his wife. Let's say you have a husband who's learning in the yeshiva. And his wife wants to spend a little time, I think she wants to schmooze, and he says, has no time, never has any time. What do you mean never has any time? That's his obligation. He has to spend time with his wife. He has to see to it. The Mishnah says, Al tar b'sichem ha'yishav, he's going to schmooze with his wife all day and all night, so he's not going to be able to succeed in learning, won't be able to succeed in business either. So ribui sicha is not recommended. Al tar b'sichem ha'yishav, that's a bad idea. But the little bit of sicha b'teila a person has to have with his wife. The Talmud speaks about a husband who's interested in learning, or a husband is interested in doing business or doing research or whatever, scientific research, and the wife wants to chew his ear off, she wants to hak him. So the Gemara says you have to be careful. It should be small doicha b'min mekarev. A little bit a person has to give in to his wife. Even though he's busy solving all the world's problems of cancer research, learning, solving all the problems of learning, whatever big, great things that he's doing. But if his wife wants to spend a little time just to have a little sicha b'teila, so he's obligated to do that. We mentioned earlier that the Talmud speaks of these two mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael, that there's a special mitzvah of Ahavas Yisrael between the husband and the wife. It's not that the mitzvah applies equally to all Jews. There's more of a mitzvah towards spouse. And then there's a mitzvah of Kavod HaBriyos, which also applies more specifically with respect to one spouse. The rabbis of the Talmud, many are familiar, the rabbis of the Talmud derived the institution of what we call Kiddushei Kesef, that a chassan gives a ring to the kala, and he says, Hariat Mekudeshesli, and this accomplishes that they are married. So this is derived based on the Gzeres Shavah, that it says in Parshas Kiseitzi, Kiikachi Shisha, and the verb Kicha appears in Chayisora, when Sori Meina passed away, and Avraham Avinu purchased the Moras HaMachpela as a burial place for his beloved wife. So it says, the verb kicha appears over there. So it seems very strange. The rabbis couldn't find a better source for this. They're learning out the din of Kiddushei Kesef from Avraham Avinu purchasing a piece of real estate. That's where Rabbi Hirsch writes in one of his essays that the maskilim always used to make fun of the rabbis of the Talmud, that they treat buying a wife like buying real estate, like you're buying a horse. You're buying real estate that belongs to you, so you buy your wife also. Kicha, kicha, mizdei afram. So he writes about this, that this is a mistake. This is a mistake. Quite to the contrary, if you look in Chosha Mishpat, the Taz points out that since you're deriving kicha kicha Mr. Ephron, and we know that when you're getting married, you're not paying for the value of the wife. The wife is either priceless or worthless, either one or the other, but she's not worth the value of the ring. So he says, the Taz writes in Chashmish, we're deriving just the reverse, just like by Kiddushei Kesef, the money is not given as Kesef Piron, you're not paying for the value of the wife. It doesn't make any sense. So too, when you buy a field and you give a dollar, the Gemara says, you can be koine, there's a building that's worth $5 million in the middle of Manhattan, you can buy the building for a pruta. So the Taz asked the Kasha, but the building is not worth a pruta, it's worth $5 billion. How do you buy it with a pruta? He says, buying the karka with kesef is a symbolic act. The penny that you give, the money that you give, is not piron de mehamekach, you're not paying for the value of the house. Otherwise, how could the rabbis have derived getting married from over there? It's just a symbolic act. So why did the rabbis learn out davke kiddushei kesef from the Moras HaMachpelah? So Rabbi Hirsch explains, it's not because they consider buying a wife like buying real estate. Fakir, buying real estate, you learn out from buying the wife that it's only a symbolic act. He says, no, the rabbis wanted to emphasize that the husband... life, to treat her with dignity and with respect. And even after she died, he spent $400 in expensive silver coins. That was unheard of, to spend so much money to buy a burial plot for someone. And they had cemeteries. Avraham Avinu says, no, for my wife it has to be a special burial plot. He loved his wife so much that even after she died, he spent so much money to be mechabed her. So Rabbi Hirsch writes, he thinks that that's what the rabbis of the Talmud were driving at over here. Everyone should get married in such a way, planning in advance to show this extra degree of respect towards their wife, afilo lachamoisa, kalvachamid b'chayel, more so while the wife is alive. The Talmud in Bava Metzia, in Perek HaZohar, speaks about oinor, when someone is in business and is selling merchandise and he fools the customer, he charges too much, or he sells faulty, damaged merchandise, and he doesn't tell the customer that this is damaged, so that's a violation of oinoas mamon. You're cheating in business. Then the Gemara continues to speak about oinoas devarim, because the pasuk in the end of Chumash Vayikros mentions twice, losonu ishus amiso. So the first time, losonu ishus amiso goes on cheating in business. Why is it repeated the second time? So the rabbis say that goes on oinoas devarim, not to harm someone else with your words. Not to say, oh, you're a galitziana, you're a yekke, or you're an idiot, or to cause aggravation, to cause pain to someone else. So then the Talmud has the whole discussion of how to treat one's wife in the context of oinoas devarim. So the rabbis say it's prohibited to cause aggravation to anybody, but certainly more so to cause aggravation to one's spouse, because the husband is obligated to be mechabed the wife is obligated to be mechabed the husband. So if one is going to make a remark to cause pain or aggravation to the other one, that's clearly a violation of the covet. In addition to being a violation of Einoaz Dvarim, which would have applied to any stranger, it's a double avera of a violation of the whole contract of the marriage, the bris of the marriage, requiring that each of the spouses should demonstrate covet for the other. But sometimes you have wives who demonstrate a little bit too much covet for their husbands. Sometimes a girl will marry a man, such a big Talmid Chacham, she worships her husband, is so great. And even when the husband does something stupid, he doesn't dress properly, he doesn't speak properly, he doesn't eat with Derech Eretz, he doesn't work properly. A lot of times you have to come in a little bit absent-minded. So the wives worship the husband so much, they don't say anything. That's not a chelek of kovet habaal, not to give musa to the husband. On the rabbi, the wife has to give musa to the husband. The husband has to give musa to the wife. They shouldn't give musa in such a way to bop the other person over the head. There's an obligation of kovet. There's a din of aynoaz dvorim, which applies even more so to spouse. So one should be careful when you want to give terchacha to a spouse, to give it in a way, let's discuss the issue, bring out a sefer, or discuss it in a respectful fashion. But that the person should decide they have such respect for their spouse, they don't want to give many musa. That's ridiculous. You don't say, ishti kegufa, and therefore there's no mitzvah terchacha. There's no mitzvah terchacha to myself, so there's no mitzvah terchacha to my spouse. No. There is a mitzvah. There's more of a mitzvah of tachacha to the spouse than there is to all the strangers. I live with the spouse. Of course I have to give musa. If the wife sees that her husband doesn't wake up for minyan, so it's her obligation to wake him up and push him out of bed and make sure he gets to minyan on time. Not just gets to minyan. She gets to minyan 5 minutes early, 10 minutes early. If the husband doesn't go to learn daf yomi or whatever he's supposed to, whatever madrega of learning he's on, Mishnah Yomis, or 3 hours, or 5 hours a day, whatever he can do. So it's the wife's obligation to push him to learn. The famous Gemara in Brachas, the Gemara says, in what merit will the women be zecha to olam habo? It's a very strange question. Do women do the mitzvahs that they're obligated to do, and the men do the mitzvahs that they're obligated to do? So each one should deserve olam habo if they do the mitzvahs that they're obligated to do. So the Chafetz Chaim quotes from the Chayei Odom that he thinks the Pshat in the Gemara is the following. There is a Gemara in the end of Maseches Ksubis where the Gemara says, Olam Haba is only for people who learn Torah. Amei Ha'aretz don't go to Olam Haba. And it's not a punishment for the fact that they violated the Bittul Torah. No, it's the institution of Olam Haba only makes sense for people who learn Torah. One who has no Shaychus with learning has no Shaychus with Olam Haba. So that's what the Chayyadim says. That was the Gemara's problem. If you have a woman who's a tzaddikah, she keeps all the mitzvahs that she has to keep, milas chasadim and everything, but she doesn't learn Torah. Not mechuyev to learn Torah, so she doesn't learn Torah. So how are the women going to go to Olam Haba if Olam Haba only has a shaychus with people who learn Torah? So the Gemara says Olam Haba is either for people who learn Torah or who support Torah or who encourage others to learn Torah. So the Gemara says, if you have balabatim who give money to yeshivas, they're supporting Torah. So they have a share in Olam Haba also, even if they themselves do not learn. And the women who encourage their husbands to go to Beis Medrash and to learn, and sometimes they stay up late at night, so when the husband comes home from learning, they give him a kind word. They don't go to sleep and let the husband come home later and eat his own supper on his own. No, they go out of their way to encourage the husbands to learn, or encourage their children to learn, and they do the homework with the children. So they'll be zeichet olam habo in the schus that they're encouraging and enabling the husbands and the children to learn Torah. This is very important. The women should realize that that's part of their obligation in marriage. There's a famous vertel from one of the great Hasidish Rebbes. He said, commenting on the Gemara, it says in Parashas Bereishis, when the Rabbanu Shel Olam decided to create Chava as an ezer kenegdo. So the Gemara says, it sounds a little contradictory. Ezer means to help other Marishan, and Kenegda means against other Marishan. So which is it? Is she supposed to help him out, or are they supposed to be fighting with each other? So the Gemara says, it depends if the husband is Zoyche, if he's worthy, if he's a Shema Mitzvahs and a Medaktik the Mitzvahs, then the wife that he gets will be an Ezer. And if he's Loi Zoyche, if he doesn't merit, he doesn't deserve to have a happy marriage, then the wife is going to be Kenegda, she's going to be a witch, and she's going to give him a hard time. But that's the way we usually interpret the Gemara, that if Loi Zacha, if he's not worthy, then the marriage will be miserable, and she'll be Zevetim Dagein Leon. He's going to have a miserable marriage. So this Hasidish Rebbe commented, he doesn't think that that's what it means. What it means is, if Zacha, if the husband wakes up on time for minyan, and he goes to learn, is Ezer, fine, so the wife is going to go along. If Loi Zacha, the husband is lazy, he doesn't want to wake up to minyan, and he doesn't want to go learn, he wants to watch television, the wife has an obligation to be kenegdo. She shouldn't just sit along and watch television with him and let him sleep in bed an extra hour and daven at home. She should not let him do that. She has to be kenegdo. She has to be his opponent, not to give him a hard time in marriage, not to be a witch, to gain the yarn. I mean, she should encourage him to go. She should make sure in a nice way that he wakes up for minyan and he does daven 3 times a day and he goes to the Beis Medrash to learn and so on and so forth. That's part of the wife's obligation in marriage. that her husband is not up to par, she should see to it that she helps him develop a little better. The Gemara has in Nedarim a very strange story. There was a couple. My first daughter married a boy from Switzerland. So at the time that they got married, he didn't speak English well, and my daughter didn't speak Swiss German at all. But as Rabbi Gerelich used to say, the language of love was international, so they fell in love and they married, and very happily married. So now my daughter speaks Swiss German, and my son-in-law speaks a very good English. So at the time that they got married, they couldn't really carry on too good a conversation. So at that time, my youngest boy was very young. He was at 6, 7 years old, I don't remember what. So at the Sheva Brachas, he stood up on a chair. He was very short at that time. Now he's very tall. That time he's very short, so he wanted to speak. So he stood up on a chair that people should see him. And he held a drasha by the Sheva Brachas that we had. So he told over, he remembered this story from the Gemara. So he says, the Gemara in the dorm tells a story about a boy and a girl who got married. They both came from Eretz Yisrael, but different parts of Eretz Yisrael. So they both spoke Hebrew with a different dialect. So they didn't really understand each other in conversation. So whenever the husband would say what he'd like to have for supper, for lunch, whatever, so the wife would cook something else because she didn't understand what he was asking. They didn't understand each other. So one day in exasperation, the husband didn't know what to do, so he took the candlestick on the table and he told his wife, take the candlestick and bang it on the bava. The bava kama, bava tzir, bava basa, bava means the gate. So he meant, take the candlestick. He was so angry. So he tells his wife, take the candlestick and bang it on the bava. She didn't speak that Aramaic language. She didn't know what bava meant. Bava means a shar. So she didn't know what bava meant. So she knew there was a rabbi, Bava Ben Buto, happened to be one of the Tanaim, who was walking in the street. So she took the candlestick. She thought the husband wanted to bop him over the head. So she walked out into the street and she hit him over the head. So he looks at the Tana looks at the woman and she says, excuse me, what was this all about? Why did he hit me over the head? So she says to him in her dialect of Hebrew and Aramaic, my husband told me I should hit the candlestick over the bava. So he wants me to hit. So the Tana understood already that there was a misunderstanding, that the husband was angry, wanted to bang it over the doorpost. So he gave her a blessing that she should have a happy marriage and they should have healthy children and everything should go well. And he commented, this is the comment that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, Eizeh Ha'ishah Ksheira, who is a good wife, Kol She'oseh Ritzon Ba'ala. So I remember at one point when I first got married, there was some issue that I was fighting with my wife about, and we happened to be visiting by my in-laws at that time. So I said, my father-in-law heard what was going on. So I said to him, Pa, what do you say? So he said, the Gemara tells us, Eizeh Ha'ishah Ksheira, who is a wonderful wife, Kol She'oseh Ritzon Ba'ala. So what does it mean? The wife does what the husband wants when she thinks that it makes sense. If it makes sense, so she's not doing Ritzayim Baila. That's Ritzayim Atzma. It makes sense. The Gemara is telling us the wife is supposed to listen to the husband even if it doesn't make sense. She didn't think it made sense to bop the rabbi over the head, Bava Ben Buta, and nonetheless she went and she bopped him over the head. Now that was an extreme case. That was silly. If it's clear to the wife that the husband is requesting something that's absolutely outlandish, that's ridiculous, so she should not listen to the husband. That's ridiculous. But that anything is room to do, but the wife is supposed to listen to the husband. The final should be by the husband. The rabbis of the Talmud would often make up an excuse for wives at that time. So I said, my father-in-law heard what was going on. So I said to him, Pa, what do you say? So he said, the Gemara tells us, Eizeh Ha'ishah Ksheira, who is a wonderful wife, Kol She'oseh Ritzon Ba'ala. So what does it mean? The wife does what the husband wants when she thinks that it makes sense. If it makes sense, so she's not doing Ritzon Ba'ala. That's Ritzon Atzma. It makes sense. The Gemara is telling us the wife is supposed to listen to the husband even if it doesn't make sense. She didn't think it made sense to bop the rabbi over the head, Bava Ben Buta. And nonetheless, she went and she bopped him over the head. Now, that was an extreme case. That was silly. If it's clear to the wife that the husband is requesting something that's absolutely outlandish, that's ridiculous, so she should not listen to the husband. That's at the beginning of the marriage. They tell a story about Rabbi Saul Salanta that he was married for 40 years, and he made a comment. When he first got married, he made this agreement with his wife that whenever there'll be a dispute and they won't be able to resolve it among the two of them, so if it's a religious matter, he should have the final say. And if it's a worldly matter, midli d'alma, the wife should have the final say. So then he added on a comment. He says, surprise of surprise, he's married 40 years. No mili dalma ever came up. Everything was mili dishmaya. Sometimes that is the case. Sometimes that will be the case. But there has to be some agreement. Each has to be mechabed the other in a proper fashion. The Gemara understands that part of the obligation of the husband to be mechabed his wife is to consult the wife when he has to make decisions. Look, if the husband is in investments and the wife knows how to knit and she knows how to visit the sick in the hospital and do other things, she doesn't know anything about investments, so he doesn't have to consult his wife about that. She's not interested in consultation. But let's say some issue about where to send the children to school or how to arrange for the bar mitzvah or something. So the husband should not take all of these things in hand and make all the decisions. The Gemara recommends that the husband should, part of Kavod Ha'isha is to consult each other. Part of Kavod HaBaal and Kavod HaAisha, each one should consult the other. The Gemara has the famous story in Brachas that when they wanted to appoint Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah as the chief rabbi, there was a whole hassle, and they fired the chief rabbi, Rabbi Gamliel, and then they had to decide who should take over the position. So they finally were considering appointing Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He was very young at that time. So he said he has to consult his wife. So it would appear from the Gemara that Derech Eretz did, what does the decision have to do with his wife? So the Pashtus in the Gemara is that Derech Eretz dictates, out of Kavod Ishtoi, one should consult, not to make these kind of decisions on one's own. Others suggest maybe that Gemara means something else, because the chief rabbi is going to have such a burden of obligations, he won't be able to spend that much time with his wife. And it says in the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara, that let's say the husband decides to change his business, he wants to go into a different field. So is he? He's doing well in this field. He decides he's going to make more money if he goes to a different field. So if by switching his livelihood, he will have less time to spend with his wife, so then the halacha dictates he's not permitted to change his occupation without approval from his wife. Because when they got married, the understanding was that he's going to spend so much time with his wife. And now he's changing his occupation. He won't be able to spend that much time with the wife. So that place. In that case, the halacha requires absolutely the wife has to give permission. So others claim that that's the reason why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah felt obligated to consult his wife. As the chief rabbi, he's hardly going to have any time to breathe, so he won't be able to spend as much time with his wife as it was. He was a rabbi, he was in the Beis Medrash most of the time, hardly spent any time with his wife. As the chief rabbi, spent less time. But still, the Gemara does say this. Even if this Gemara doesn't mean it, there's another Gemara, famous Gemara in Hazov. Again, the Gemara says, Itzach gutza, if your wife is short, so the Gemara says, Gichin lo, v'lochish lo, bend over and ask her for her advice. The Gemara always recommends that the husband should consult the wife. The wife should consult the husband. That's part of the obligation of Kavod. Part of the chiyuv to be mechabed each other requires that one should consult on all reasonable issues. It's ridiculous to consult on all issues, but all reasonable issues one should consult and not do on one's own. In the letter of the Chazon Ish, he also points out that part of Kavod requires, let's say, the husband comes and goes from the house and he never tells his wife where he's going. The wife is interested in knowing where is he going, or the husband is interested in knowing where is his wife going. And they say, none of your business. So that's also a violation of Kavod. Kavod requires that you should tell the other, you should tell the spouse how to go here and there, how to go in Menachem Allah, how to go here with shopping, whatever. You should say where you're going, where you're coming from, unless it's involving Lashon Hara. That a lot of people make a mistake. They think that Ishta Kegufa and Baal Ki Ishta, it's like one person, so there's no Lashon Hara. If I see something terrible and I think about it in my mind, that's not Lashon Hara. So if I tell my spouse, that's not a violation of Lashon Hara because we're one person. So there the Paskim say explicitly, the Gemara said that's not correct. The prohibition of Lashon Hara certainly applies between a husband and a wife. They're considered two different people with respect to Lashon Hara. One should be careful not to tell over Lashon Hara to one spouse. But to say where you're coming from, where you're going to, and how long you think it's going to take, and approximately what time you're going to come back, and if it turns out that you don't come back on time, you should call on the cell phone to tell your wife that I'm going to be a half an hour late. So Derech Eretz dictates that the husband and the wife should notify each other. That's part of the obligation of Kavod, that they're obligated to be mechabed each other. Chazon Ish also writes in that famous letter that it's not proper for married people to keep secrets from each other. Some secrets, not necessary to tell. Let's say there are secrets in the past, what I did before I got married. So all the averis that I did, irrelevant. All the girls that I was fooling around with, it's not relevant. I don't have to tell a lot to my wife. But what am I doing now? What I'm doing now? So that's not proper to keep secrets. And that's exactly what we write in the Tanoim, those who still write Tanoim. So we write, Va'al yavrichu, va'al yalimo, lo zeh mizo, v'lo zeh mizeh. They promise each other that they won't keep secrets from each other. In the text of the Tanoim, it refers to monetary matters, that we won't keep hidden bank accounts from each other. Also a problem. Many people, when they get married, they maintain separate bank accounts. The husband has his own cheshbon, the wife has her own cheshbon, they have no shaykhs with each other. With v'hoyle basar echad, normalcy dictates that they should have a joint bank account. They should show that they're married, not that each one should maintain their maiden name, and each one mach shabbos vazich, and everybody leads his own life. There are some people who have a marriage like that. It's like an ongoing debate. They're always insulting each other, and each one's trying to figure out how they can zogarai more to each other, and each one goes their own way. And some of these people are prominent rabbis, and their students think that that's normal. That's not normal. Normal is that they're mechabit each other, and they love each other, and they show the people who are watching that they are mechabit each other. Another aspect of kavod requires that people should not be controlling of each other. Sometimes you have a spouse who's so controlling, he doesn't let the other person ever voice an opinion. I remember quite a few years ago, they asked me to participate in a Nefesh conference. Nefesh is an organization for social workers and psychologists and sociologists and psychiatrists, these kind of people. So they often have a lot of shilas. What do you do? The father's doing an aver. Is it a din of kibud av? What do you do? The wife is doing an aver. What do you do? So they had me have a session with these professionals, and they were shooting questions. What do you do in this case? What do you do in that case? So most of the questions I had never heard before. So most of the questions I said, I don't know. That's a good question. So that's why they never invited me to speak again. They need someone who knows the answers. So they have people who are expert, rabbanim, who had these shilas all the time. They gave the answers. So I felt very bad. I kept on saying, I don't know. Good Shiloh, I don't know. I got to think about it. So after that presentation, which was very poor on my part, so a woman comes over. She was sitting next to my wife. I think she went to school with my wife or something. She's sitting. And then afterwards, she comes over to me. She says, you know, this is the first time I ever heard a rabbi get up in public and say so many times, I don't know. She said she was married to a very prominent rabbi. I happened to know who he was. She was married, and she couldn't take it. They had to get divorced. Why? She said, on any time an issue came up, it's a maimah chazal, it's an offer in the Gemara, and there's nothing to discuss. He knew the answers before there was ever any chance for discussion. She never opened her mouth. He didn't let her open her mouth on anything. His mom is so controlling, there was nothing to discuss. So this is, even if he's right, and even if he knows all the maimah chazal, but still, you should discuss it with the spouse. Neither should be controlling of the other one. You give them a chance to express their opinion, and then, with sweetness, explain why you think that your position is more correct, and then if it's a stalemate, so bring it to another Talmid Chacham who may or may not side with the husband. But this is certainly also part of the obligation of kavod. Kavod, let's say the husband is concerned, the wife has some product, some food product, he thinks it doesn't have a hechsher on it, and it's something that really needs a hechsher. So he's going to go take the product and he's going to say, ah, you bought these cookies, they don't have a hechsher, what are you doing making the whole house straight? So instead of screaming, he should tell his wife, could you please take a look, make sure that it has a hechsher. You know, cookies need a hechsher. You can say the same thing in a bekavadika fashion. Each person has to show respect for the spouse, and they have to show trust in the spouse. Not that you distrust them. You have to ask them to please check into it, call up this kashrus organization, find out if they give a hechsher or not, and rely on the spouse that they're really calling up. If you don't trust your spouse, so how do you eat the food in the house? And how do you trust the person that they went to the mikveh? There has to be trust and there has to be respect to each other. The Mishnah has another interesting comment, and I'll close with this. Mishnah Ksubis on Daf Ayin Beis says that the husband always has to pay the wife Ksubah unless we can ascertain that the wife was at fault for ruining the marriage. So the Mishnah gives another example of a case where the wife was at fault for ruining the marriage, namely, if the wife is disrespectful to the in-laws. So we assume that the basis of the Jewish people is the family. The whole Jewish people is considered one big family. We look up to our great-grandfathers, Avraham Avinu and Yitzchak Avinu and Yaakov Avinu. And we always refer back to Avinu. And even a ger who converted into the Jewish people also refers to them as Avinu. Avraham Avinu is called Av Hamon Goyim. That's why his name was changed from Avraham to Avraham. He's the father of all of the gerim. The whole Jewish people is considered one big happy family, supposed to be, one big happy family. So it's important to keep this in mind, that the whole Jewish nation, the whole Jewish people is one family. And the basis of maintaining a family is that you have to have kibbutz, you have to respect the parents. If there's no respect for the parents, then the family is going to fall apart and the whole Jewish people will fall apart. So the Mishnah says that if you have a marriage and one of the spouses in the marriage is disrespectful to either their parents or the other one's parents, it doesn't make a difference. Usually we'll be disrespectful to the outlaws, to the in-laws. I'm going to be disrespectful to my parents. But sometimes it's the reverse. Sometimes the children are disrespectful to their own parents and they're very respectful to their in-laws. So the Mishnah means to say, whenever someone in the marriage, whenever one of the spouses is disrespectful towards parents, this is going to lead to the ruination of the marriage. Because in order to maintain a marriage, you have to emphasize and re-emphasize kibud aviyim. You have to have the positions straight, that these are the parents and the elders and we have to have respect for them. So that's what the Mishnah says. If a wife walks into the street, improperly dressed, so that's grounds for divorce. Why? Because tznius is very crucial to the marriage. And if the wife doesn't speaks with lack of tznius, speaks of private things in public, or dresses in an immodest fashion, it's considered that she's ruining the marriage. That's grounds for divorce, and the husband doesn't have to pay ksuba, she's responsible for ruining the marriage. Or if either the husband or wife, the husband has to pay ksuba whether it's his fault or it's not his fault. The only time the husband doesn't pay ksuba is when it's the wife's fault. So the Mishnah only concentrates on that angle. When does the husband get away with not paying ksuba? The Mishnah says if the wife is disrespectful to her parents or his parents, that's considered grounds for divorce, because disrespect for the ruins the whole thing, the whole of the family. And marriage is based on the whole of the family. Nation is very family-oriented. The whole Jewish people is one big family. These are some of the ideas that the Talmud brings out with respect to Shalom Bayis. There are collections in Hebrew and English of many more passages from the Gemara, many more statements in the Shulchan Aruch, which are further developments of these passages in the Gemara. These are all beautiful ideas. It's really kedai for people before they get married, when they're newlyweds, and every couple of years to review these things, because we get used to our style of living, and we forget that there are rules and regulations and things and nips that the Rav given us and us how to make a pleasant marriage and how to preserve one's shalom bayis. So it's really kedai to read these sforim that are available both in English and in Hebrew to brush up on the rules and regulations of a happy marriage in order that we should all be blessed with this shalom bayis. I want to wish everybody a ksiva v'chasima toiva, a good geben shtior.
I want to thank Rabbi Shechter for his beautiful words, and we should be zocha that the Hashuas Hashchina, which was spoken about, should indeed be something which is ever present in our homes. We're going to daven Ma'ariv now. Tapes of this shiur and also of Rabbi Shechter's Sunday shiur will be available immediately following Ma'ariv.